Welcome back to Teaching the Unteachables, where we dive into teaching and learning methodologies for professionals like you. Before we start with today's episode, I want to address a common challenge that I've noticed among HVACR professionals. They often struggle to keep up with the advancements in heat pump technologies. That's why here at the ESCO Group, along with the HVACR Learning Network, we have an amazing library of courses to equip you with the essential skills for handling today's inverter-driven heat pumps. And better yet, we're offering free access to the first two chapters of our most popular course on the fundamentals of high-performance heat pumps. Check out the link in the show notes to get your free access.
Make that new HVAC system match up with the duct system that's there.
That's right.
Yeah, because exactly, like whenever you start getting the more leakage, when you get a larger system on a smaller duct system, yeah, you get higher static pressure, which means it's gonna leak harder. That's another thing I like to demo on this thing too. I've got some return leaks. And so if you're using filter grills, maybe if your system is just in the ceiling and you're filtering it right there at the ceiling, well, any leaks that you have between that filter and the air handler are not getting filtered. So you're just pulling in maybe mold spores from a crawl space, if that's where it is, or just dust from an attic.
Right.
All that's going straight in and getting distributed throughout the house. So, you know, understanding where those leaks are and where your filter location is means a lot too.
This episode brought to you by RetroTech, manufacturing blower, door, and duct testing equipment for over 30 years. Learn more at RetroTech.com. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us once again on Did You Know? The ESCO HVAC Podcast. So today we're spending some time with Sam Myers from RetroTech, and I see some fantastic goodies in front of you. What have you got today, sir?
Oh, yeah. So what you see here is a little model house with the goal to demonstrate how mechanical systems interact with the building enclosure. I've been at RetroTech now for 7 years. Before, I was at a company out of Raleigh, North Carolina called Advanced Energy. And our senior building scientist there was John Tooley, who I had the pleasure of learning from for several years before he retired. Still around, though. But back in the 80s, he wrote a paper with Neil Moyer called Mad Air. And it's all about how mechanical systems interact with the building enclosure. And I think it's one of the most overlooked pieces of literature in our industry.
I hear about it all the time.
And so that's why I've called this the Mad House.
Oh.
It's kind of a nod back to that work that John and Neil did back in the 80s. But yeah, you know, if you've seen any of my presentations, webinars, videos, I'm always talking about how the building enclosure is a part of the HVAC system. And this simulator here was designed to demonstrate how that all works.
Okay. Yeah, I just finished up doing a curriculum. I worked with a bunch of members of the industry. I actually used one of your videos in there, doing some demonstrations in the e-learning course, as well as in the PowerPoint presentation on high-performance heat pumps. Because as we start moving into higher efficiency pieces of equipment and we start implementing heat pumps into the industry, it's more important than ever to understand the structure. Not just the capacity, but the structure and ways that we can improve the performance of the structure and then potentially reduce that heating load. So this is intriguing to me. I'm quite anxious to be able to see a visual demonstration without having, you know, a full scale home.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I designed this, you know, if you've ever seen the House of Pressure that Anthony Cox has, that served as a lot of inspiration for this, but I wanted to have this to be able to pack it down in a Pelican case and ship it around.
Take it, you bet.
So I will have this at the conference.
I'll
be teaching one of my presentations using this, where we're really going to do a deep dive showing how, you know, even bedroom doors serve as a part of the HVAC system and demonstrate how that works. But today I figured we could do a little bit of a demonstration to show how duct leakage can wreak havoc on a house when we're talking about comfort and indoor air quality. I live in the Southeast. I'm in coastal North Carolina. And so here in the Southeast, we do this really stupid thing where we put duct systems outside of the building enclosure.
I've seen a lot of that.
I know. And we're still building houses like that today as fast as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we have a leaky duct system in a place like that, in a vented attic or in a vented crawl space, We're just asking for trouble. What I was going to do today, I don't know if how well you can see, but I've got these caps. What you see across here, this is our supply trunk.
Uh-huh.
And I have one main return. And you can see here, there's a couple of sliders that I have throughout the house that I can open and close that serve as air leakage in the building enclosures. So we can make it tight or we can make it loose. And then we can control where that leakage is. I also have some sliders that connect bedrooms to the hallway. So to serve as maybe a jumper duct or not really an individual return, but maybe a transfer grill over a door.
See that a lot here in the Midwest. I have.
Yeah. So for pressure balancing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I have some caps here on the supply and the return side so that I can simulate duct leakage. And to be able to get fans and everything at a scale that works well for this, inside of our air handler, we actually have a miniature squirrel cage fan that's used in 3D printers.
Oh, wow.
So that does a really good job of making a miniature HVAC system for it. Yeah. And then we have some small laptop cooling fans for a couple of these rooms, too, to serve as a bath fan or maybe a dryer running.
You bet.
And we have a little control. All these fans are USB powered. We have a little control module where we can make them variable speed. So we can make one at a low flow for maybe a bath fan, crank one up a little higher to simulate a dryer running. Because usually for a dryer, you can expect about 2 to 250 CFM.
It's quite good.
They'll create different pressures in the house. But let's turn our main blower on. We have this little gauge here is our Solo high resolution manometer. It auto zeros just like our blower door manometers do. It's like if you cut one in half and just have one sensor, that's all it is. So let's see what happened here. We don't have a lot of leakage so far in our duct system, but we can make some go. So there we've got our blower running. Not a big pressure difference there. -0.3 pascals. Mm-hmm. It's nearly nothing to be concerned about. But if we add some supply leakage, we can see that negative number start to grow. Now we're at about -2.5.
Very significant.
And we'll add a little bit more. And we see this a lot in existing homes. Let's see, about -4 is what we're at now.
Yeah.
And that's close to a pressure that could backdraft a water heater just from having supply leakage. And you would never know it. Unless you actually hook a manometer up like
measuring
this, to see what your house pressure is when your mechanical systems are running. Of course, on a house, an actual house, you're not going to have just a pressure tap where you can hook a hose up to. So we have these little probes that you can use. This is called a multi-probe. It's a little stainless steel 16th of an inch pipe that has a fitting on it. So you can shut this on an exterior door and get your house pressure that way.
Very cool.
You can also use these as static pressure probes. They're pretty slick.
Yeah, I like that idea.
But in an actual house, that's what I would use to do this.
Sure. All right. So what are we looking for? What is our goal and what are the results going to be starting to show us?
Yeah. So ideally, there's a few things that we need to know in order to understand what we're looking at. So if I'm able to turn the HVAC system on and I see a pressure differential like this, if it is negative, like this number is, that means I have more supply leakage than I have return leakage. It doesn't tell me how much that I have,
right,
but it tells me that I have more on that side than others, which for a system that I see in my area like this, that's pretty common because usually what we have is one main return and then we have a supply trunk and branches coming off. So there's more fittings on that supply side that are going to leak.
Right.
So negative houses are pretty common for this type of setup, which isn't good because what that's doing is that's awesome. Actively pulling air in that we don't want.
Sure.
And so if this is in a vented attic, I mean, think about what's in a vented attic. They're the dustiest places known to man. blown insulation is what we have in there.
Sure.
And so whatever's in that air that's around that duct system is what's getting actively pulled into the house. So if that's where our leaks are. So here we have a leak simulated on the front. I have a little smoke machine here. I put a little smoke here. We can see that house is getting depressurized because we see
pushing
the fog getting pulled inside.
Yeah, pulling through the opening.
But a lot of the times, our air leaks are usually at the very top of the house or at the very bottom. We have all kinds of penetrations in the ceiling. Wherever we have a top plate, there's usually a crack between the drywall and the top plate where air gets pulled into. Any penetrations that we have around lighting, plumbing, things like that, where stuff gets pulled in. Similar for crawl spaces and basements too. A lot of times we'll also have some penetrations there, but we'll have air pulled in that we don't want.
It's amazing how many openings and places that we have, particularly in existing homes. New homes, we're starting to get better at sealing them up. We're starting to understand that a little bit more in new construction. But still, many homes, especially, you know, non-custom-built homes, which is primarily what we see in the United States, right? You know, they're bulk-built homes. They're not sealed incredibly well. So I've even had in my own home, when I first moved into it, it's 4 years old, and I started noticing quite a few drafts in the place, thinking, wow, are these really here? I mean, am I really getting this significant of a draft through the structure? And so every home, whether it's new or old, has these drafts that we don't always think about. You know, a really good example, Bill Spohn did the Spohn home.
Yep.
Anticipated on having this very, very tight structure, very, very low load home. And then after completion, realized, wow, even though we were attempting to do everything to spec, we still had things we had to go back and find. And yep. So there are so many places that we have these, really, it's a leak of energy. And this is the way we find it. And we start locating it and we make differences. And am I correct that we're really starting to see local jurisdictions paying a lot more attention to home leakage than we have in the past?
Yeah, they are. It's, you know, it's a tough thing to keep up with for an equipment manufacturer who's trying to help you know, different trades across the country. Now, everything kind of comes off of the International Energy Conservation Code, the IECC.
Yes.
That's where you're going to find your requirements for this. And every state, usually most states, adopt some version of that. And then what happens is they'll either leave it alone, but in a lot of cases, they'll make amendments. And then you have to go in and see what changes they wanted to make. So, like, for example, here in North Carolina, we have the 2018 IECC with amendments. And so that means they have removed the air tightness testing part. However, some states leave it in, but, you know, North Carolina is a good example where, yeah, the state doesn't require it, but certain jurisdictions do.
Oh,
so really it's very, very local. You know, you could be in one county that requires one thing and another county might require something else. So we're starting to see a little bit of that happen. So for example, I live in Wilmington, North Carolina. Across the river is Leland, and they're now enforcing duct tightness testing.
No kidding.
So it's something that they're really starting to have to learn and figure out, because now they've done the 2018 IECC with no amendments. So you really just have to pay attention to where you're working.
Yeah. And now it's a matter of getting educated on what that means. You know, as an HVAC contractor, you know, this is a responsibility for us to learn and to understand. And your portable demonstration really gives us a good example of, you know, where these leakages can be and how much it can affect our system.
Yeah. And so I think one thing to look for, you know, if we're talking about existing homes that were built before we had these kinds of requirements that are popping up now, you know, you can take this kind of manometer and reference the outside and just start turning on fans. Like, for example, here, I've got a bath fan running and we can see -4. And if I start turning on more fans and it starts to get more and more negative, well, that tells me something about that building envelope. For me to get that to pressure with just a cheap builder grade exhaust fan, then it's probably a pretty tight house. A leaky house is not going to be able to get the pressure that easy. So for example, if I start turning on bath fans, a dryer, and a kitchen exhaust, and it stays at 0, then I've got a pretty drafty house. There's a good chance I've got some problems I cannot HVAC my way out of.
Right.
And we have to make that building tighter for the mechanical system to really cooperate with it. So just by doing some quick checks like that with a high resolution manometer can tell you a whole lot about what's going on.
Very, very cool. All right. So you're going to be using this as a demonstration at your class at the National HVACR Education Conference. We're going to be doing some demonstrations on how we can measure and start to understand the building. And now let's talk about, like, ways that we can start making changes to these structures when we start seeing these numbers. Tell us a little bit more about what we're going to be doing after we start finding that we do have some depressurization issues.
Yeah. So I think a part of this, you know, being able to take these measurements and then explain to the homeowner,
right,
what's actually going on. First of all, that builds a lot of trust. Especially if you're getting into things that might be a little bit outside of your wheelhouse as an HVAC contractor. You know, a lot of the times we're not insulators, we're not air sealing contractors, we're HVAC contractors. But, you know, as an HVAC contractor, the last thing I would want to do is have a customer spend a bunch of money with me and then still not be happy.
Yes.
So it's important to be able to relay, like, okay, we can do this, we can get this kind of system in, but your building enclosure is the container that holds all of the conditioned air that we're creating here. So if that's not working, then you're not going to feel much of a difference. And so what we're seeing is a lot of these contractors are, they're creating partnerships with weatherization contractors or insulation contractors that do this kind of work. Or we can go in and vacuum out the loose fill insulation, do our air sealing across the ceiling, and then blow new insulation in. Because if we just suck insulation out and blow new in without air sealing, we're not really doing anything.
Right.
So that air sealing is really what's going to make that building enclosure work well for any kind of mechanical system that we install.
You know, we've had a lot of our programs. We typically work with about 1,400 schools around the country. We get questions from many of them. Quite a few are, you know, accredited through HVAC Excellence. And one of the questions we've had a lot this year is, how do we implement energy auditing into our HVAC programs? Because we're starting to see a lot of funds. I just did a podcast with Mia Lombardi from the U.S. Department of Energy. We're talking mm-hmm. about this $8.8 billion of energy assistance that's being pumped into the country, and many states that are starting to look at that as, okay, we would like to do this. But one of the primary requirements is that we need to really do an energy audit of the structure. We need to have the properly trained technicians in there. And in my personal opinion, the HVAC contractor is the right person to have in there. They can understand exactly. this ventilation, this V that is a big part of who we are in the management of air. So if I'm an instructor and I'm looking at my program and I'm going, okay, I really think we should be spending a little bit more time talking about energy auditing. We might even make a certificate because all states are now looking at, you know, certifications for energy auditors. So we have qualified energy auditors. And if this $8.8 billion continues to be invested into the country the way it's looking like it is right now, we're going to need a lot of energy auditors. And I would prefer that our HVAC contractors start looking at that and our programs start investing into energy auditing education. So if I'm an instructor, if I'm a school, if I'm an administrator, and I'm wanting to learn more about a structure and the tools needed to be able to measure that, let's talk about ways that we can connect with RetroTech to add this into our curriculum.
Yeah, we work with a lot of schools to be able to implement that into certain programs. You know, we're also working with a lot of HVAC contractors who are trying to do exactly what you're talking about, getting more into the energy audit side of things, which I'm not a huge fan of the term of energy audit. I mean, that's why a lot of these funds are coming out. But it's really the comfort side. And the indoor air quality side, and you're doing the same thing to achieve all three of those. And I like to see the energy efficiency as just a nice byproduct of whatever other goal you're trying to achieve. A good program that a lot of contractors are going through is BPI, the Building Performance Institute. They have a fantastic certification. Their IDL, their infiltration and duct leakage, it goes through all the processes of being able to run those types of tests. And be able to interpret what those numbers mean, how to use the equipment, how to communicate the results to clients, and then be able to take that information and, you know, even integrate that into your manual J so you can have a blower door number, a duct leakage number to have more confidence in your load counts that way too.
Yeah, so true. And so in those type of trainings, we're starting to understand how to do, you know, blower door testing and starting to do duct leakage testing and getting deeper into that. I cover it very briefly in our high performance heat pump training just to help explain what it is. And then we encourage, you know, the instructors to bring in more training, and we encourage the viewers to take a certification class, right? Dive deeper into understanding this, because it's a little transition for a technician who hasn't looked at a building from this perspective before. But it really is, you mentioned it earlier, it really is part of what we do. It's understanding that human comfort. Yes, we're hopefully going to, well, we probably are, we're going to save energy in the long run. But that comfort is a major, major part of why we're doing things like duct leakage and building leakage.
Yeah, for an HVAC contractor, you know, the comfort problems and the indoor air quality problems are what make the phone ring, right? You don't really get a lot of phone calls about high energy bills unless it's just really bad.
Yeah, or new install.
yeah, exactly. People just kind of get used to what the energy costs are, and they just don't think that there's much that they can do about it, when in reality, there's a lot that they can do about it.
You bet.
But these people just don't think that way. It's when they aren't sleeping well at night because of an uncomfortable room or something like that. That's when they really want to start diving in and making their house better. That's what we've seen anyway.
No, that's completely correct. You know, when I look at some of our older structures in particularly, and I have HVAC contractors that are going to, you know, size and analyze the equipment, you know, for decades, we've had contractors that have, if they weren't comfortable with the size of equipment that was in it, they upsized it by a half a ton, right? So we have many existing duct systems that were rated the same. It was designed for, you know, a 3-ton system, now has a 4-ton system on it, has higher fan speeds, has even more significant duct leakage. In reality, yep, if we could actually go through and find and correct the duct leakage issues and the building leakage issues, we could start reducing the capacity of the systems and get back to where it was originally designed for, and even better. And so now we can really look at a system and confidently reduce the size and get the proper heating and cooling capacities that the building is looking for.
Yeah, and make that new HVAC system match up with the duct system that's there.
That's right.
Because exactly, like whenever you start getting the more leakage, when you get a larger system on a smaller duct system, yeah, you get higher static pressure, which means it's going to leak harder. That's another thing I like to demo on this thing too. I've got some return leaks. And so if you're using filter grills, maybe if your system is just in the ceiling and you're filtering it right there at the ceiling, well, any leaks that you have between that filter and the air handler are not getting filtered. So you're just pulling in maybe mold spores from a crawl space, if that's where it is, or just dust from an attic.
Right.
All that's going straight in and getting distributed throughout the house. So, you know, understanding where those leaks are and where your filter location is means a lot too.
All right. Fantastic. No. Sam Myers, RetroTech. I'm grateful that you joined us today. I encourage everyone, come hang out with Sam at the conference and spend a little bit of time learning more about RetroTech.
Absolutely. Yeah, Clifton, thanks for having me on, man. This is always fun.
Absolutely. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll catch you on the next episode of Did You Know? The ESCO HVAC Podcast.